welcome along to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Ed McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And today on the show, we're talking about trading up or buying an ISA house or invest. What should I do? Now, this one actually comes from a listener of the show, James, who says, "Hey, mate, love the podcast. My wife and I have two kids and own a home in West Auckland. Now, I'm the only one with an income, so we've got a household income of 120K right now. So we own a property worth about 1.4 million and we've got a mortgage on it of 400K. We've also got 700K in a fund." Now, his question is this: he'd like to move into a bigger house in another part of town because they're starting to outgrow their current one. Now, they don't know whether to do it now and get their kids settled into school in the new part of town where they want to move and then start investing later, or begin investing in property now and just deal with the smaller house for a few years. So is there a way that he can do both, move and invest? Anyway, hope that makes sense. Keep up the good work. So what we'll do in this episode is we're going to deconstruct James's situation here, talk about the options. Now, what is important here is, remember, this is just a podcast. We've got an Instagram message here with James's situation. We'll talk about how we might analyze it, but we're not telling James what to do. And James, while you're listening, this isn't personalized financial advice. This is just some ideas for your situation. You'll ideally then decide what you want to do going forward, make that decision, or you can go see us or another financial advisor to get that personalized financial advice if that's what you're after. Now, Andrew, you are the person who's spent the last 19 odd years analysing people's situations.
Don't make it sound as bad as it is.
So what are the good things you're seeing here?
There's a lot to play with. You've got a low mortgage for Auckland, which is great. You've got lots of usable equity. So about $1 million worth of equity, which equates to about 720 of usable equity, the equity you can actually access. And you've got heaps of cash in the fund. So well done, James. The big question, if we were sitting down face to face, I'd ask is the money in the fund liquid? And what are the returns on the fund? Because that's going to determine some of these options, probably.
Actually, I did get an Instagram message back because I asked these questions of him. So the money in the fund is liquid. So there's a huge amount of money there, 700K. And the returns are, I think it's in a balanced fund at the moment.
Okay, so probably 5%, say.
Yeah, that's probably what you'd suggest the pre-tax returns might be.
Yep.
Now, there are some constraints in this situation, and it is clearly around bank lending. Now, although it isn't a requirement across all banks in terms of debt to income ratios, we usually use it as a ballpark estimate. So we might use a 7x or a 6x debt to income ratio just to estimate the borrowing that you'd potentially have. And of course, that's going to include rental income when we start to decide, well, what would it look like if you were to go and purchase an investment property? So what I've done is I've run two scenarios, just ballpark ones, which says that if you didn't touch the fund, what could you do? And you could probably do one or the other. You could either upgrade your owner-occupier or you could go and purchase an investment. Here's what the scenarios look like. So if you go and want to upgrade your owner-occupier home, you've got 120K worth of income. So you've got the ability to perhaps borrow an extra 440K. Now, that means going from your $1.4 million property up to about a $1.77 million property. That's because I've included sale costs if you go and sell that property that you currently own. So the net outcome is you'd be taking on an extra 440K worth of borrowing, and the price of property you'd get is 370K more. That's if you went and decided to purchase the owner-occupier. Now, I don't know where you want to buy, James, but an extra 370-odd-K of property in Auckland, I don't know what that gets you, but my assumption is it might get you a bit closer to the city, probably not substantially. Would that be a fair?
I think that's fair.
I think that's probably an okay assumption, especially if you want to move to a nicer part of town and want a bigger place. My assessment, just running these scenarios, again, not looking at your personal situation, is perhaps that's not as much as you might have thought it might have been. Is that your read on the situation too, Andrew?
Yep.
If I look at the investment property, including both your actual income and your rental income, again, ballpark 560K worth of lending if you wanted to go and purchase an investment. Now, that's looking a wee bit tight depending
on... Not getting much for that nowadays.
Not really, unless you're going to buy a do-up in, you know, South Canterbury and something like that. If you're looking to purchase a new build, which is what we talk about a lot on the show, probably not getting a much. But what you could do is tip 75K in from the fund. That'd probably get you up to 650K.
Yeah.
So those are really the two options modelled out under these scenarios, kind of one or the other, trying not to touch the fund that much. But what if James wanted to touch that fund? What sort of things could he do?
So look, if you liquidated the entire fund, James, then you'd take the cash and you'd pay off your personal mortgage in full because that's not tax deductible. And then as you buy investment properties on the assumption that they're new and tax deductible, you'd stack all the debt against those. And actually, to be fair, I would, even if you bought an existing property, I'd stack the debt against those in case the laws change in the future again. And 400K obviously is going to go straight from your fund to paying off your mortgage. That leaves you with 320K. You could use that to upgrade your house as well. So you could sell your place, go and spend another 320 on a nicer property for yourself or a better location for yourself. And then once your mortgage is fully repaid, there's about $1 million worth of borrowing ability for investment property. So you could get a property pretty much anywhere in the country for that. So you could go out and buy a brand new investment property worth up to $1 million. You can upgrade your house by $320,000. Your pros are you're mortgage free at this stage, so you're saving in your interest costs and probably better cash flow because you're paying principal on that. And you've got into a nicer house that you want. The cons, you lose the returns of the fund.
And so in that case, we're really talking about taking that 700K and putting it to use. Now, one of the big things that I'm thinking, you know, if I was in this situation, is there would be some very good reasons not to touch the fund to that extent. You know, if you've got 700K that is relatively liquid there, it's a lot of money. That's going to go, I don't actually even know how old you are, James, from memory. I think you might have said 36. You know, that could go so far for your retirement if you're putting that away. I mean, as long as you're investing it right. I know what you're saying, Andrew. Yeah, but you could invest that in houses as well. Yep. You're absolutely correct. I'll let you have your say in a minute.
You could also have that money still liquid once you've paid off your mortgage if you have something like a revolving credit facility. But then it's going to affect your ability to borrow investment. So, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I already thought of that, Andrew.
Well, but you can still remember if you don't spend $1 million. Yeah, I could see in your eyes you hadn't.
So if it was me, because I think having something in the fund is probably maybe what you want to do, maybe not. I don't know. I haven't asked you. I'd like to think about some other options. And I think there are probably two. So we've already talked about doing one or the other. We've talked about doing both by playing around with the fund. One thing that I've thought is because serviceability is your biggest constraint, one option is to, dare I say it, send your wife back to work if she's able to. So if she went back to work, for instance, for 60K a year, then you'd be able to increase your ability to buy a rental property up to about just over $1 million if you stayed in the same house. So you were at 560-ish, it would go up to about just over $1 million. You'd be able to purchase that investment property. Now, look, I don't know whether that's an option or whether that's in the life plan for you, but it's one option that we typically see investors consider if they're currently on one income, serviceability is a constraint, they're not able to go get a mortgage, and so they then decide, hey, look, the second partner's going to go back to work, increases their household income, and so they're able to borrow more. The other option, and I mean, as a rent investor myself, and Andrew, you were as well, I always think that one option is to rent. Now, James, you've already told me that this wouldn't be your preferred situation because I asked whether it's something you'd consider. But one option is to say, look, you've got heaps of usable equity. You would be able to turn your owner-occupier into a rental and still have enough equity within that property to go and purchase your next investment property. Now, running some basic numbers on your property, your owner-occupier home, because it's a $1.4 million property, and let's assume that it attracts a 3% gross yield. So being really conservative in that situation, might bring in $800 a week. Now, based on the same kind of financial modelling again, if you were to rent out your owner-occupier home now, you'd be able to afford probably about 800K worth of rental properties or just over. So you could go buy another rental property, still have your owner-occupier again as a rental, and then you'd be able to go and rent where you want to live. Now, the reason I quite like this situation is because you're in the equity position to be able to do it. You'll be able to move to the area of town and the size of house that you want to. You're going to be able to rent out what is currently your owner-occupier, turn it into investment property, and then go purchase another investment property wherever you want. The net result is you still have two properties and you get to live in the area you want to in that situation. Now, again, I'm not telling you to go and do this, James, or that this is some advice, some personalised financial advice I'm giving you.
This is the most disclaimers we've had in the show so far.
Well, it's because we're really talking about a specific situation and analysing their goals. So I do think that it is worthwhile for, you know, James to probably talk to somebody and get, you know, talk through these scenarios. But I kind of like this setup for some investors when they want to live somewhere, but they also want to invest and trying to get the best of both worlds. Now, of course, you still would have to meet the bank serviceability criteria other than debt to income ratios. You'd have to figure it all out. But this is how you can start thinking through the different options that you've got. What are some other things that James might like to consider, though?
So actually, I've got a question for you, Ed. As we're going through this, I'm thinking, okay, well, if I'm a renter investor, which is what I was for a number of years, how does my rent get calculated in my debt? Because it's not a debt.
Well, of course, you've still got to meet the servicing criteria. Now, what's important to remember is that your rental payments will be tested at what they are. So let's say that, James, you're paying $800 a week in rent. So they're going to look at that as an $800 a week expense. Now, if you get $800 a week for your owner-occupier, then in the bank servicing tests, that's not $800 a week. Because you're an existing property, it's actually going to be
$800 times 60%.
Yeah, which is
$480. Oh, Ed, you're off your game using your calculator on that. You can tell you've been on holiday.
Yeah, I know. So what's important to note is that they don't actually offset each other. So it's not like you can rent your property out for $800, you can spend $800 on rent, and it's going to be assessed the same because, of course, the bank is going to cut back on what your rent is tested at for your owner-occupied property.
And then factor in your rates and insurance on that property as well.
Well, depending which bank you're going with. Yeah. But this is why it's probably worthwhile having a wee think through that situation if you go down the rental property route. But what else might be something that James might need to consider, Andrew?
Well, I think you've just got to figure out, James, if you're happy waiting out upgrading the house. I mean, it's all well and good for Ed and I to say, based on the numbers, you know, you can start investing, just put up with the house. But if that makes you miserable, don't do that because life's too short to be miserable. But potentially if you say, hey, look, it's not ideal, but it's okay, then great. Then you can go down that path.
I think the interesting thing, just modelling the numbers, and again, would want to dig in more deeply if James was our client and we were going through all of the numbers. But one thing that surprised me was actually that the increase in value of property that somebody with these sorts of numbers could afford is actually not that great. By the time you sell the property, pay your legal costs, pay your moving costs, pay the real estate agent, then take on that additional borrowing and try and upgrade your house. It was, in this instance, I think we said a $370K nicer house. Now, James, you're going to know what that buys in Auckland based on exactly where you live and where you then want to move into. Of course, you also have the option of tipping in money from the fund to top that up. That's up to you if you want to do that and think through those things. But I think the key takeaway for people listening to the show is that this is how you might go about analysing your situation and saying, well, what are my options? It's always easier to make a decision once you know what those options are. So if you were thinking that, hey, I'm actually going to go from a $1.4 million house to a $2.4 million house, then once you run the numbers, you might say, well, oh, actually, maybe that's not very achievable if I don't want to touch other assets that I've got. And once you've got it on paper and have the situations mapped out, that's when you're able to make a clear financial decision. Hey, look, let's wrap it up there, but please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. It really does help us get the message out to more people. And hey, if you've got a case study, maybe something like this, doesn't have to necessarily be this detailed, doesn't have to be whether you've got lots of money or very little money, why don't you send us it in and we can talk about it on the show and just not tell you what to do because we can't do that. It's a podcast, but we could give you ideas for analysing your situation. You could either text us 5522 or just reach out on Instagram. Thanks for listening to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Ed McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And we're going to be back again tomorrow with even more daily strategies, tactics, and insights to help you get the most out of the New Zealand property market. Until next time.